Money FM 89.3. Best of the evening runway. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
That's right, you're listening to Money FM 89.3, and it's now time for Market View, where we take a look at how the Singapore stock market is likely to close for the day, the biggest movers, sectors and companies to watch. But as always, a quick recap of how we started. Well, Singapore shares were poked into the negative territory today, tracking a Wall Street retreat after US inflation data topped estimates, dashing hopes for near-term rate cuts by the US Fed. An early trade, the Straits Times Index was down 0.9% to 3,209 points after nearly 93 million securities changed hands in the broader market. Now let's take you through the numbers I have on my screen. As usual, closing numbers still firming up, but at this point in time, the Straits Times Index down 0.41%. We're looking at 3,224 points. In terms of value turnover, that's 1.36 billion Sing dollars. Now, gainers outnumbered losers, though, 319 versus 305. Top five movers by value, we've got your DBS, UOB, OCBC, Singtel, and Seatrium. Heavily traded securities, Seatrium, Holeong, and Thai Beverage. Now, in terms of companies to watch, we do have City Developments Limited, the property developer subsidiary, City View Place Holdings, said it will be selling 58 units of the residences at W Singapore Sentosa Cove this month. Now, elsewhere, from the impact of a hotter US March inflation report on Asian markets to Adobe purchasing videos to build its AI text-to-video generator, we've got more international and corporate headlines, not to mention China's March inflation numbers as well. Now, joining me on the line is David Chow, Director at Azure Capital. David, welcome.
Hi, Tintin. Hi, everyone. We certainly have a lot of things to cover today.
Thanks to Jerome Powell and thanks to what's happening in the US. Well, let's start with the US this time round, David. Lots to digest last night as well. Forecast busting US inflation report. If we look at the Consumer Price Index, CPI, up 0.4% on the month, 3.5% on the year, both numbers above consensus for the third month in a row. Now, this prompts observers to warn that maybe that pickup we saw in January, February, it might not be a blip, it might be a worrying trend. Some are saying maybe it could even be a rate hike this year instead of a cut. So, all in, David, how would you make sense of the situation, and how has the CPI figures really influenced Asian equities and currencies like the Japanese yen today?
Well, certainly I think some of the doubts around me start to throw in the towels already. But if you look at the Fed funds futures market, it was surprisingly 68 basis point in terms of rate cuts for this year, at the start of the day, but that's priced to just 45 basis point in the aftermath of the report. And now June rate cut pricing is now down to just 20%, just 55% before the release of the data, and now July is now like a toss up. And if I look at, even further down to September, it's like only September will we see, the first rate hike according to the market, but just barely. And if we look at further up, maybe to the U.S. two-year yields, they are up, 19 basis points to close to 5%, which, indicates a higher for longer stance, which is what the Fed state will do. So I think, the next round of Fed commentary will be insightful. After all the doubts that the FOMC have been holding out, hope for a decline in inflation, due to a lagged housing effects, and there's a good argument for that. But at some point, you need to see it in the data. Rates rose 0.4% once again in this report, and shelter make some more than 60% of the increase in inflation in the past year. So with this, it's not hard to see why the Asian markets are mostly down today, because the chances of Fed holding on to current rate could now be longer.
Okay. So if not June, then when? But David, as we try to guess what's next for the Fed, where the STI is concerned, how has the index fared today? Any surprises when it comes to the biggest movers, particularly CDL, after its subsidiary City View Place Holdings said it'll be selling that 58 units of the residence at W Singapore Sentosa Cove this month?
I think it's really hard for the STI to close on a positive footing after what has happened. And even though it closed lower today, there could be further falls ahead, just as STI looks to test the top of its recent trading range, as I said last week. So last week I was saying that it looks like a breakout to the upside, could happen, but it really depends on how the whole rate situation evolves. And with this morning's or yesterday's night's data, I guess the hurdle is even higher now. And just to add to the woes, you know, that the SPY could face, you know, the first earnings season for U.S. stock is just around the corner, and with, you know, with the major bank reporting set to be released this week. And, you know, despite the S&P 500 index climbing, you know, about 10% in the first 3 months, the earnings guidance for S&P 500 companies in the first quarter is not that optimistic. You know, if I see some of the data out there, you know, I think around 79 out of, you know, 500, out of the 500 companies have issued negative earnings per share guidance just in the first quarter alone. And this number alone is also the second highest, you know, since the second quarter of 2019. So if this is to happen, you know, SPI certainly looks more room, you know, to go on the downside. And on city development, I would say, you know, well, selling 58 units is certainly good for the revenue, you know, for sure. Even though they may be priced lower, say maybe 40%, you know, or even more. But after all, it's inventory clearings. So the margins should still be of a slight concern there. So, you know, on the top line, just to be caught, is the FY23 numbers. I think revenue jumped actually 50% for the last whole fiscal year to around 4.9 billion. Thanks to the recognition of contributions for, you know, Piedmont Grand EC and the sales of freehold land in Tokyo. So depending on, you know, where the revenue for the sales of this specific Sentosa Cove project is recognized, it could, of course, help in the revenue for this coming fiscal year. But it's not that huge. If you take a median price of around 2.5 million for all 158 units, it just adds up to 145 million. And, you know, by and large, it still depends on the timings of these sales. So, with this being said, currently the street is projecting a 14 to 15% fall in revenue this year for the company. So this forecast, you know, could be narrowed, again, depending on the sales of this project and other initiatives from the company. So property, I think, development aside for city development, you know, management has also articulated previously in the strategy to really pursue, you know, divestment opportunities. To recycle capital as well as to expand its fund management platform. So, you know, these are some of the catalysts that will propel, you know, city development this year.
Right. And I do want to zoom in on what you mentioned earlier, don't mind me, David, about the negative EPS guidance by some of the US companies, I believe, right? So why is there a disconnect between what the companies are telling us versus what the economic indicators are telling us? Because non-farm payrolls are obviously hotter, prices are still hot. What is the state of the U.S. economy then?
Okay, I guess the state of the U.S. economy is by and large still healthy. But, you know, don't forget that, you know, if you look deeper at the 79 companies that have issued, you know, negative, you know, earnings per share guidance, and we're not saying that they will incur a loss, just that earnings per share is due to fall. Some of these companies also operate also overseas. And, you know, with the and with some of the stronger, you know, US dollar, you know, when they are doing the conversion, you know, definitely some of the numbers will be affected.
Okay, I see. Now, from CDL back to Singapore, David, let's take a look at Frasers Property. The real estate firm said on Tuesday that it is expecting to report a significant fall in profit for the first half of the fiscal year ended March, partly due to fair value losses, impairment of certain commercial properties in the UK. Now, again, how concerning is this for Frasers Properties then?
I think share price was down about 3% today, if I'm not mistaken. Well, I think this type of impairment really underscore the inherent nature of property development. And, you know, hence this is a key reason why some of our local, you know, major property developers, you know, try to move out of this space either by privatizing the business or really by mitigating the volatility that, you know, this property development brings to their overall business. So if you look at Frasers Property, a business in the UK, I think they sort of manage a commercial portfolio which comprises over, you know, 538,000, you know, square meters of, you know, both commercial and industrial business park in strategic locations in the UK. So it's a bit concerning, I feel, you know, as, you know, if I look back to their first Q updates, sometimes in that, you know, management has said that, you know, UK assets were actually stable. So numerically, you know, how much UK assets does the company have? You know, the company doesn't really break down their UK assets by itself. Instead, it combines with their assets in continental Europe and lump everything together and it just call it Europe. So this pie is around $7 billion Sing dollar, and actually accounts for 18% of total assets. Revenue contribution-wise, it's also not easy to identify how much UK assets alone you know, have contributed to revenue, you know, given that they also lump the UK assets into both industry and hospitality in their segment reporting. So if you look at, you know, both industry and hospitality set, you know, contribution respectively, they contributed about 33% of revenue as a whole, and, you know, 45% of, you know, profit and loss, you know, before your interest, fair value change, tax and exceptional items. So, you know, since Fraser has stated that, you know, net profit will see a significant fall in the first half, I guess the UK rated assets, you know, must be significant enough, even though, you know, we don't have the breakdown. So should we be concerned? Well, I think if you look back, you know, its effects are non-cash. And a good thing for investors who are already in the stocks and, you know, who are actually seeking the dividends from, you know, holding these stocks, I guess they don't have to worry because, you know, Frasers do not have a dividend payout policy based on their net profit. Instead, it pays out a fixed amount of dividends, which in recent years have been around 4.5 cents.
Okay. Now, across the region, David, China's consumer prices barely increased from a year ago last month. Industrial prices continued to slump. If we look at data by the National Bureau of Statistics, right, CPI up just 0.1% and much from the year ago period, 0.4% gain was expected. Your thoughts?
Well, I guess there are definitely still deflationary forces prevailing in the economy with this set of data, so no doubt about it. And recovery in the broad economy is still weak. And I say that, and I said it before, and I'll say it again, the pace is really limited by the lingering property crisis. And, you know, the new home sales data, you know, from what I have, you know, fell further, you know, by about 25% year on year, and the property investment actually the decline, you know, came in larger than expected, you know, 9% year on year in the first 2 months of the year. So, you know, next week there'll be data on industry production, you know, fixed asset investment, FAI and export. So if you recall, you know, China's macro economy, they actually make surprising progress in the first 2 months this year, you know, with industrial production, your FAI and export growth all accelerating and coming in well above Bloomberg consensus. So these three pieces of data is something which we'll be looking out for. However, we also like to remind everyone that there's also a low base effect being played out. You know, industry production, for example, while it recovered to about 7% year on year in 2 months, the first 2 months of the year, it actually came off from a low base of 2.4% year on year in the same period last year. And this is likewise for exports as well. So all in all, very little green shoots have come in for China.
Right, I see. And let's turn to look at corporate news for the last two questions, about 4 minutes to go. David, Apple supplier Foxconn reportedly considering introducing this rotating chief executive system in a major overhaul of their management structure to nurture future talent. What bearing will this have on investor sentiment on Foxconn, though?
I think if this structure is introduced, I think could that be similar to Huawei's approach in 2011, where, you know, I think at that time, three of their top executives actually took turns serving as acting CEO for a period of about 6 months. I understand that from a corporate governance perspective, it's really important to separate the roles of, you know, and CEO and that of the chairperson. After all, we don't want to, you know, avoid, you know, concentration of powers in one individual and just ensure there's a degree of check and balances. Especially since the current chair, I think Mr. Yang Liu has been holding dual position since 2019.
Yeah.
So, you know, however, on the flip side, you know, a six-month tenure, for example, can also mean that whoever is occupying this position could adopt a short-term measure in the business aspect to boost he or her standing when they are in charge and sort of perhaps jeopardizing the company in the medium to long term. But then again, you know, the chances of this happening will be huge given that, you know, the same person is going to be rotated back to the same position in perhaps a year time. So I would think that if this structure is implemented, there should also be a comprehensive, you know, handover of duties to this person so he or she will be well informed, etc. Overall, I think investor sentiment shouldn't be affected by this structure even.
Right. And further away, David, this one before we let you go. Adobe reportedly began to procure videos to build its AI text-to-video generator as it tries to catch up with OpenAI, I believe, which demonstrated a similar technology. Now, if we go by documents seen by Bloomberg, it revealed that Adobe is offering its network of photographers and artists $120 to submit videos of people engaged in everyday actions like walking or expressing emotions, including joy and anger. Any quick thoughts?
I think given Adobe's recent history of positive quarterly surprises against consensus estimate, it wouldn't come as a surprise if the companies once again exceed expectations, but the hurdles, I think, are definitely higher, which I will explain later. So, you know, a lot of these companies have said they are going to implement AI in their earnings call to investors, but most importantly, they must really try to quantify the effect that AI will have on their financial numbers. So, you know, with this procurement of video, it could be said to be another AI utilizing initiative. And, if I look back at their first quarter numbers, first quarter updates, they have a 12% year-on-year growth in their revenue and I think 18% growth in their earnings per share. So, and there was actually strong momentum across their products such as Creative Cloud, Document Cloud, and Experience Cloud. So for that, the company has done a good job so far, really harnessing the power of generative AI to, provide innovation across their product portfolio. So even as the first Q was decent, on the flip side, unfortunately, that's one big flip side. Management actually said that, in the second quarter, they have actually slashed their guidance, and this was mainly due to increased anxieties about higher competition regarding its current AI products. So if I look at their competitors such as Midjourney and Stability AI, they are really looking to muster in on Adobe's graphics sector share, and they have also been increasing worries about Adobe being slower to monetize its AI products and tools than investors would ideally like. So by looking to push more adoption of the tools for now rather than generate high income from them, so I think AI in general could also turn out to be negative to Adobe, as it can actually automate several tasks that Adobe users still do manually. So with that being said, that could lead to lesser demand for their products further down the line and perhaps chipping away its competitiveness. So all in all, I can say that Adobe is now at the crossroads at this juncture.
I suppose there'll be lots to watch then. Thanks a lot, as always, David. That was David Chow, Director at Azure Capital. Thank you very much for joining us on Money FM 89.3.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance.